By remote, I'm Michael Brown, BOA News. President Donald Trump is defending his promotion and personal use of an anti-malaria drug, hydroxychloroquine, as a medication against COVID-19. Trump said thousands and thousands of frontline healthcare workers are taking hydroxychloroquine, and it's endorsed by many doctors. Physicians, however, say there are serious risks associated with taking the drug, including the threat it could interfere with heart rhythm. There is no solid scientific evidence that the drug can prevent or treat the disease caused by coronavirus. Here in the United States, more than 1.5 million people have been diagnosed with coronavirus and 90,000 have died. Several people associated with the White House have tested positive for COVID-19 this month. Brazil's daily death toll from the new coronavirus jumped to a record 1,179 on Tuesday, as President Trump said he is considering imposing a ban on travel from Brazil. Brazil overtook Britain on Monday to become the country with the third highest number of confirmed infections, behind Russia and the United States. Brazil's confirmed cases also jumped by a record 17,408 Tuesday, for a total of 271,628 people have tested positive for the virus. President Jair Bolsonaro, an ideological ally of Trump, has been widely criticized for his handling of the outbreak, such as opposition to restrictions on movement he sees harmful to the economy. As always, for more news, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com, or the VOA mobile app. Via remote, this is VOA News. The Chilean Air Force relocated three COVID-19 patients in critical condition from Santiago to Concepcion Wednesday, make that Tuesday, looking to free needed space in intensive care units. The Air Force has relocated 16 people in the last week, a partial solution, as not all patients are eligible to be transferred into other hospitals with free ICU spaces. The government ordered on Tuesday that private medical facilities with intensive care beds to increase their space available by 20% within 6 days and double the capacity within a month. The Johns Hopkins University says Chile has nearly 50,000 confirmed COVID-19 cases and more than 500 deaths have been recorded. Voters in Burundi will choose the country's new president Wednesday, along with members of parliament and local officials, which are tempered by the challenge of the coronavirus outbreak and allegations of voter suppression there. Burundi's election marks the country's first step in moving away from President Pierre Nkurunziza's 15-year reign, which has been marred by allegations of human rights abuses and his controversial decision to seek a third five-year term 5 years ago, which propelled the country into economic chaos. Burundi's leadership has largely ignored the threat of the coronavirus, allowing large political rallies leading up to the vote, and imposing no restrictions on people's movement. The government also just expelled, with no explanation, four top WHO World Health Organization officials, changing the response to the epidemic. So far, Burundi has confirmed 42 cases and one death from the virus, but some doctors have expressed concern the government is not revealing the full impact of the virus. Taiwan's president, Tsai Ing-wen, said Wednesday her government wants dialogue with China but cannot accept its proposal for one country, two systems. The speech after being sworn in for her second and final term in office, Tsai said relations between Taiwan and China had reached an historical turning point. Both sides have a duty to find a way to coexist over the long term and prevent the intensification of antagonism and differences, she said. Tsai and her Democratic Progressive Party won January's presidential and parliamentary elections by landslide, vowing to stand up to China, which claims Taiwan and its own as its own, and says it would be brought under Beijing's control by force if needed. For more news, voanews.com, or join us on the VOA mobile app. Via remote, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, May 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Lesotho's new prime minister and government will be sworn in today, Wednesday.
I must indicate this is the first time we have a prime minister coming like this, and there are a lot of expectations on him and his government to take the country out of the crisis that it has been in the last 2.5 years or so.
There are concerns political rallies in Malawi could help spread the coronavirus. 4 Liberian opposition parties agreed to collaborate in future elections. Alleged Rwanda genocide perpetrator appeared in a French court on Tuesday. And East African community countries assure smooth trade amid COVID-19.
We came together as East African member states to see how we can develop an understanding of driving commerce with minimal amount of disruption.
Adam Mohammed is Kenya's East African Community and Regional Development Cabinet Secretary. And at least 43 Guinea-Bissau healthcare workers test positive for COVID-19. Those stories and more coming up on Daybreak Africa. The tiny Southern African nation of Lesotho is expected to swear in a new prime minister today, Wednesday. Many hope the installation of Dr. Moketsi Majoro will finally bring an end to the country's lengthy political crisis. Majoro is Lesotho's former finance minister who earned his doctorate degree in economics in the United States. But can this bookish technocrat finally bring peace to the troubled mountain kingdom? As viewers Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg, the hopes of 2 million Basotho people are riding on it.
Hopes are high across politically fractious Lesotho as Moketsi Majoro, the nation's finance minister, prepares to become prime minister. His swearing-in, scheduled for Wednesday, comes after 2 years of bitter political squabbles in the tiny mountain kingdom surrounded on all sides by South Africa. Here's politician Motla Tantwa Letsosa singing the new leader's praises. He spoke to VOA via WhatsApp.
I think he's a good guy. He has been in the government administration for quite a long time. He was once the principal secretary for the same ministry, finance, where he's now the minister. He was also the minister of development and planning, and now he's going to be the prime minister. And remember, he worked at IMF for quite a long time. So he's the gentleman who is familiar with the Lesotho political landscape and the international politics, especially when it comes to financial international politics. So I think he's going to take our country forward.
Here's why those words are so striking. Letsosa is deputy leader of the Democratic Congress, the main opposition party. His party will now join a coalition with Majoro's ruling All Basotho Convention, a move that just months ago would have been thought impossible in the nation's deeply divided political landscape. This new political dispensation comes after months of bitter political wrangling to force Prime Minister Thomas Tabane to resign, which he did in May. His rule has been marred with a number of killings of high-ranking officials in recent years. Critics say that is an inevitable consequence of Tabane's failure to keep the nation's security forces out of politics. Tabane and his current wife are also suspects in the 2017 killing of one of his former wives, an issue that riveted the nation in recent months. Tabane was not offered immunity from prosecution in return for stepping down. And so, says Motlamele Anthony Kapa, an associate professor in political science at the National University of Lesotho, the nation will have to clean up that legal issue before it can move on. He spoke to VOA on the WhatsApp platform.
We are expecting both of them to appear before the courts to hear the case of the murder of his former wife.
Letsosa says he also has high expectations for the new leader, especially regarding his handling of the global coronavirus pandemic.
Lesotho has one case to date, but we are not going to be complacent and say we are immune to this. Nobody's immune. So we are expecting that he will take fight to another level to make sure that this one case does not multiply. Another thing which is so important is national economy. Our economy is struggling, and he has been the Minister of Finance. He knows that.
Kapa agrees and notes that this is an unusual moment for the tiny country, which, despite its size, is a major global wool and mohair supplier.
I must indicate this is the first time we have a prime minister coming like this, and there are a lot of expectations on him and his government to take the country out of the crisis that it has been in the last 2.5 years or so. Yeah, people are excited. They're waiting to see what is going to happen, what this government is going to do differently from the one that is replacing now.
Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Health experts in Malawi are concerned the ongoing political campaigns could contribute to spreading the coronavirus. Political parties are holding mass rallies ahead of the July 2nd presidential election, with few people wearing face masks or observing social distancing guidelines. One candidate told his supporters to hug when they see each other in the streets. Malawi currently has around 70 COVID-19 cases, with 3 deaths and 27 recoveries. Health officials have warned that the number of cases will balloon if the gathering continue. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi's political parties hit the campaign trail this month ahead of the July 2 presidential election. Supporters have been attending rallies in large numbers, most without face masks, ignoring measures recommended by the government to prevent spreading the coronavirus. The Southern African country has recorded 71 cases of coronavirus so far and only 3 deaths. But health rights activists are concerned about the situation. George Jobe is the executive director for Malawi Health Equity Network. He told VOA via WhatsApp he is worried that should this trend continue, Malawi will not win its battle against COVID-19.
For that to be achieved, we must continue to observe social distance using face masks where social distance can be compromised to ensure we are safe, using hand sanitizers, washing off hands, and avoiding handshakes. All those pieces of advice that we have been receiving, we must continue to observe them.
But one prominent political leader has remained adamant in an open defiance on preventive measures. The country's vice president, Saulos Chilima, told a political rally in the capital Lilongwe this week that people should continue to converge in large numbers. Chilima, leader of the opposition United Transformation Movement Party, is part of an electoral alliance that includes the Malawi Congress Party and the People's Party. Chilima said, when we are walking, if you meet someone putting on MCP clothes, hug them. And if you meet someone in EPP clothes, hug them. They are your relations. He said you cannot contract diseases hugging one another. Malawi is due to hold fresh presidential elections on July 2 after the country's constitutional court nullified last year's election, during which President Peter Mutharika won a second term. Sherif Kaisi, a political science lecturer at Blantyre International University, says although the threat of coronavirus is plain to see, politicians care only about winning the presidential race.
So they will not take any advice. But what I would say is that they have to put the nation first. And when we talk of the nation, we are talking of the lives of the people.
Health rights activist Jobe says political leaders could do better.
The political parties must ensure they make face masks. Then every time they have rallies, there should be some people who should be distributing. Everyone at the rally must be given a face mask.
In the meantime, members of Malawi's Presidential Task Force on COVID-19 say we hold a meeting with the political leaders this week to discuss how they can stage rallies without exposing their supporters to the coronavirus. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
4 opposition political parties in Liberia signed a framework for collaboration on Tuesday as they prepare to take on incumbent President George Weah's ruling coalition in the 2023 general elections. The parties hope to choose consensus candidates in future presidential and legislative elections. Moses Gazier will report from Monrovia.
The signing of the long-anticipated collaboration document was a virtual event that brought together leaders of the former ruling Unity Party, Liberty Party, Alternative National Congress Party, and the All-Liberian Party. Outgoing collaborating political parties chair and leader of the All-Liberian Party, Benin Ayire, asked his colleagues to put aside individual interests and focus on the interests of the Liberian people.
This document, I believe, will move from imperfection to perfection. We must leave individual desires and political gains aside, and we must think about the good of our people. I don't believe there's any difference between the ANC, the Liberty Party, the Unity Party, and the ALP.
Former Liberian Vice President and leader of the Unity Party, Joseph Boakai, called for cohesiveness to defeat the President Weah government, who he said has failed the Liberian people.
The CPP must remain cohesive, strong, to replace a leadership that retreats into seclusion and remains silent when our people face existential threat from a deadly global pandemic and an economy devastated by gross mismanagement, corruption, and utter incompetence.
The leader of the Liberty Party, Nyombli Kanga Lawrence, said her party hopes the CPP will restore the lost image of the country under the current regime, which she accused as corrupt and fuel leadership.
We care that Liberia has become the laughingstock of the region and the world by a growing display of gross incompetence. We care that our country is grossly mismanaged and corruption at the highest levels of the government rules the day.
Former Coca-Cola executive and leader of the Alternative National Congress Party, Alexander Cummings, was sworn as a new chairperson of the collaboration. He called on his colleagues to put their decisions to action for the benefit of the country and its people.
These are mere words on paper, and it will be all about our actions, it will be about our intent, and it will be about us showing good faith towards each other. We have to always assume good intent. We have to always speak as often as possible to find trade-offs and compromises, because again, this is not about us, but about our country and about the Liberian people.
The first challenge for the new collaborating political parties will be winning more seats in the December 2020 senatorial elections. If everything goes as planned, it seems President Weah, the former football star, may have a serious match to play in 2023 against the lineup of the new collaborating political parties. Moses Gazel, VOA News, Monrovia.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, May 20th. The United Nations has hailed the arrest of a wanted Rwandan genocide suspect, Felicien Kabuga, who appeared before a Paris court under heavy police protection on Tuesday. From the French capital, Lisa Bryant has more.
Kabuga's court appearance came 3 days after French police arrested the 84-year-old at his apartment in the Paris suburb of Agnières-sur-Seine, where officials say he had been living under a false identity. Experts say French legal procedures could take several weeks or more before Kabuga can then be transferred for trial. That's expected to come before a special body that inherited outstanding cases from the UN International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, which closed in 2015. That tribunal indicted Kabuga on 7 counts, including genocide. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, said she hoped Kabuga's arrest would encourage other states to hunt down other top genocide suspects still at large. Rights and genocide survivor groups have likewise hailed Kabuga's unexpected arrest. Lawyer Patrick Baudouin, honorary president of the International Federation for Human Rights, says it's in France's interest to ensure Kabuga is tried as soon as possible, given the years gone by and his advanced age. Once a powerful and wealthy businessman, Kabuga has been on the run across Europe and Africa for more than a quarter century. He is accused of financing militia groups who helped carry out the 1994 killings of some 800,000 Rwandan Tutsis and moderate Hutus. He also co-owned Radio Mille Collines, whose broadcast fed hatred against Rwanda's Tutsi minority. One investigator told Reuters news agency the coronavirus lockdown in France and elsewhere in Europe left them time to focus on Kabuga's trail. They reportedly traced him through internet clues left by his children, who rented the apartment where he lived. It's uncertain how and when he came to France, but neighbors have told local media they saw him around for several years, and he kept a low profile. Some activists want a fuller explanation of why it took so long to find Kabuga. Baudouin says his trial might also shed light on other genocide suspects. The genocide has long cast a shadow on French-Rwandan relations, with Kigali accusing Paris of complicity. Ties have improved in recent years. Last year, French President Emmanuel Macron appointed an expert commission to look into France's role in the killings, with a report due next year. And for the first time in April, France officially commemorated the Rwandan genocide that took place 26 years ago. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
East African community nations have agreed to adhere to COVID-19 measures to ensure smooth trade, despite opposition from Tanzania, which has defined the measures. Kenya's East Africa Community and Regional Development Cabinet Secretary Adam Mohamed said all East African member states must follow the set rules in the fight against COVID-19. Maureen Odhiambo reports from Nairobi.
The East African community has come up with measures to ensure trade is not interfered as the countries struggle to fight the COVID-19 pandemic that is spreading at a high rate in the region. Speaking in Nairobi, Kenya's East African Community and Regional Development Cabinet Secretary Adan Mohamed said that all member states should adhere to the set rules by the region to ensure trade runs smoothly.
Without global commerce and without movements of goods, pharmaceuticals, and essential goods, we will not be able to defend ourselves against this virus. And it's for that reason that within East Africa, which we are part of, we came together as East African member states to see how we can develop an understanding of driving commerce with minimal amount of disruption, because we cannot guarantee disruptions will not happen.
The Tanzanian government seemed to be against the region set measures, as it has dismissed most of the laid down guidelines to streamline trade, especially at the border points. Mr. Mohamed said that any barrier that will damage the regional relationship among member states must be addressed.
We must come together collectively to win, to fight this successfully. As a minimum, we will guarantee as Kenya, we will not stop any cargo trucks coming from any member states, including Tanzania. That is an arrangement that we must abide with as one of the member states of EAC. And so EAC remains the biggest trading partner for each of the other individual member states. And anything that will damage relationships within EAC, we must deal with it.
Yesterday, Tuesday, Kenya denied 126 Tanzanians entry to the country after testing positive for the virus at the border points, as diplomatic wrangles appear to be spicing up between the two states. Health Cabinet Secretary Mutahi Kagwe told the World Health Organization in a teleconference that East African region is committed in flattening the COVID-19 curve.
But we have returned 126 drivers who tested positive when we tested them across the border. They tested positive and therefore could not enter the country.
Kenya's COVID-19 tally has risen to 963. This is after 51 more people tested positive for the virus, as 358 recovered from the disease as by yesterday, Tuesday. The virus has affected more male than female in the country, as children between the ages of 0 to 5 years and elderly people at the age of 60 years and above record the lowest infections. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Odhiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
At least 43 health workers have been infected in Guinea-Bissau, a country with already a shortage of doctors and nurses, according to Doctors Without Borders. Monica Negrete, country director for Guinea-Bissau, spoke to Ricky Shryak about what she calls a worrying development in the country.
In fact, the timely and updated data is one of the challenges that we're currently facing, but 43 were reported infected, and we know for sure that most of them are from the Hospital Nacional Simão Mendes. So, yeah, unfortunately, some services, even the ICU, was closed for some days, and some lab reports are still pending, and as I mentioned, the data, there's challenges to to understand, yeah, the final number and how that affects the service provision. But with all these medical staff infected with COVID and currently in quarantine, they're unable to work, and the capacity to implement the programs to care for chronic patients or to attend emergencies is greatly reduced.
But what kind of challenges are there in meeting these needs, especially the protective gear, as you mentioned, for the healthcare workers?
Well, there's been several donations that have arrived and participation of a lot of different international partners, and also the SECOME had some material from previous epidemic preparedness. Unfortunately, it's been very difficult, not only at the coordination level, but also to understand these inventories and how they're being distributed either within the country or priority to the health facilities has actually been respected. And besides that, we know as Doctors Without Borders that there's a huge problem to be able to access this type of material internationally as well.
And you mentioned, I think access to healthcare in general, not just for COVID patients. Rainy season is starting in Guinea-Bissau right now. That usually means an increase in malaria, I would guess.
Well, you mentioned the malaria peak, which we are expecting, yes, for sure, when the rainy season comes. But also the increase in respiratory diseases is something that's expected as part of, just the seasonal changes. In previous years, MSF prepared for the malaria peak with additional resources, and many other places in the country do the same, which in the current pandemic crisis will be difficult, that it's assured to increase the resources, which are already lacking.
And where are people isolating in the country? Because, it's very lots of people in a house. The houses are all connected. The sanitation systems in the neighborhoods often are not really functioning very well.
Yeah, you mentioned some of the infrastructure limitations, but, just remember as well there's some cultural aspects to it that has to be taken into account. All of the health facilities should have a contingency plan, and I can talk for the ones in Bissau. Yeah, there are isolation areas that are being organized in the health facilities. For sure, there is one COVID unit inside the National Hospital Simão Mendes and in other key hospitals. And there are several hotels that have been organized by the government to be hosting these either suspected or infected patients which do not require hospital care.
That was Monica Negrete, Guinea-Bissau Country Director for Doctors Without Borders. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from the capital, Bissau. And that's it for this Wednesday, May 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, saying, have a good day.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 22:30 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com. Listen to Issues in the News, where you will hear a panel of prominent Washington journalists deliberate the latest developments on the world's top stories. Join moderator Michael Williams, Washington contributor to CBS Radio, Nahal Tusi, foreign affairs correspondent for Politico, and Josh Glancy, Washington bureau chief for the Sunday Times, this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to dumbolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important after-news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.